Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by meditation instructor Marcus Casey, is entitled, How to Deal with Difficult Emotions. We all struggle at times with emotions that overwhelm us. Usually, we tend to get caught up in these emotions or try to reject them. But there is another way. We discuss a method to utilize mindfulness and determination to release the potential and wisdom behind every emotion. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for coming today. My name is Marcus Casey.
Lama Kathy is at our home monastery this week, still engaged in the 49-day practices following the death of Kempo Karcher Rinpoche. And actually, the original plan for this week was to be having a retreat with Kempo Urgyen. And so we had an opening with Kempo Urgyen doing the same thing that Lama Kathy is doing right now. We had an opening. So this is kind of an off-book week. We normally follow a book in book studies when we don't have our lamas here. And this was kind of one that was left up to me because it wasn't on the schedule originally until a couple weeks ago. So I chose a book that I liked and that said something that I thought was very helpful. And so we'll start working our way through it. The book is called Emotional Rescue by Dzogchen Ponlamp Rinpoche. And I'm just going to spend a day kind of summarizing, giving you a taste of what's in it. If you like it, it's a great book to pick up. Ponlamp Rinpoche is both a lineage holder in our lineage as well as in the Nyingma lineage. And he really has a close connection. He has a lot of centers here in the West, has a close connection with a lot of Westerners. And really, I find his books to very much connect to a Western lifestyle and be very applicable to that lifestyle. So before we get started, we typically say the four-line refuge prayer. And when we take refuge in this prayer, and you have a copy of it on your cushions, I love that. When we take refuge through this prayer, we are taking refuge to the Buddha, or what we are aspiring to become, to the Dharma, or the path, or the teachings that show us the way, and to the Sangha, or the community, our guides and companions on the path. So, I usually say if you all know, anyone who knows it can sing along, but now you all can because we have it out there for you. So. Sangje chidang tsoki chok nam la jang chu bardu dagni gyab su chi Dagi jin so gi pe su nam gi Dro la pen chir sang je dru par sho Sang je chu dang so gi chal nam la Jang chu bar du dang ni kyab su chi Dagi jin so ki pe su nam gi Dro la pen chir sang je dru par sho Sang je chu dang so ki cho nam la Jang chu bar du dang ni kyab su chi Dagi jin so ki pe su nam gi Drola Pinchir Sangje Drupar Sho. Thank you very much. So, for a little context of what we're going to be talking about today, the Buddha summarized his teachings with four slogans: abandon what is harmful, practice what is helpful, tame your mind. These are the teachings of the Buddha. And that last one means there's nothing going in my teachings that is going to be outside of those first three. So the trouble we run into when we try to abandon what is harmful and practice what is helpful is that we have untamed minds. We most of the time bring an untamed mind to the table. And so our minds, without being tamed, often fall into habits of selfishness. They often fall victim to emotions that we cannot control. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. Punlop Rinpoche, in his book, gives us a little roadmap, some practices, and a series of practices that build on each other to help us deal with difficult emotions. So I know we all have the experience of being tormented by emotions at times. And we don't really feel like we're in control of our thoughts when that happens. When we have those moments of awareness, we can look at it and say, I'm just being tossed about here. And that's an interesting thought because it's your mind doing that to you, and it kind of becomes confusing. And so we need to learn to get a little bit of separation from that and kind of interrupt that whole mechanism where we're being tossed about by our emotions. Often we have repeat performances of the same emotions. We all have certain emotions that get to us. So actually, as we start thinking about this, I'm actually... Rinpoche uses anger a lot as his example because he says anger is so destructive, and so many people struggle with it. So I'll use anger a lot, but as you think about this, maybe take a second now to think about what emotion you would put in there, whether it's anger or something else: jealousy, greed, worry, sadness. What is it that kind of spins around in your mind and gets you worked up and takes that peace away and kind of keeps you from acting in the benefit of all beings, acting according to your best nature or according to your ideals? So today is not a talk where we're going to spend a lot of time talking about theory. This is all about practice. This is a very practical manual. And so he kind of has taken a lot of the Dharma teachings and put together a sequence here, and we're going to go over it. Now, he has a three-step plan, and step one has three steps, so don't get confused by the outline here. It's a three-step plan for how we can leave behind painful old habits and find a more joyful way of expressing ourselves. And the three steps are mindful gap, creating a mindful gap, clear seeing, and letting go. And so we'll talk through those in detail. But it is important to realize that this is progressive, and each one builds on the other one. It's not something where you're going to want to pick and choose. You're going to want to develop one, and then it'll move into the next one. So the first step in the process, Rinpoche calls mindful gap. And he says it's basically the practice of creating a safe distance between you and your emotions. And that gives us enough psychological space to work with the energy of those emotions. Now, in our intro to meditation classes that we give every Sunday here, we talk about one of the benefits of shine or shamatha meditation, our calm abiding meditation, where we rest our attention on the breath. We talk about one of the benefits of that meditation as being the creation of a small separation. Because as you start to watch those thoughts and then drop them, you start to develop a mindfulness, an awareness that sees what's going on in your mind with a little bit of a step back. So there's a little part of your mind that's not participating in the churn and that can recognize it. And this is the first step in this sequence, is to create that little gap. Now, because that is so integral and such a first step, and because one of the best ways to create that is by establishing a regular meditation practice, I thought I would go over not the entire instruction on that kind of meditation, but the mental technique that we use when we do that meditation. So we have a lot of instruction on posture and how to get in a posture that's very both stable and relaxed. But once you have done that, then you can begin the mental technique. And the first part of our shamatha meditation technique is that we place our attention on the breath as we inhale and exhale. Now, there are different ways, different people notice the breath in different, some people, it's the feel of the air as it touches their nostrils on the way in and the way out. Some people feel it entering their lungs. Some people follow that breath all the way through, in and then out. But the idea is that we have an object to rest our attention on. And that helps us to not follow every thought that comes up when we do it. The second part of the technique is that we count silently each time we exhale. This is really helpful and is not taught in all kinds of instruction that you'll see here. But often by counting, we traditionally count to 21. Just by counting every exhale, 1, in, out, 2, in, out, 3. There's just a little bit more that you're putting your attention on to keep that attention from running away. Because now you have a count. And if you lose count, you can notice it and just start back at 1. You're not trying to reach, I meditated for 5 counts of 21 without losing count. There's none of that. If you lose count, just start again at 1. No big deal. Sometimes you'll find yourself at 28, 29, 30 because you forgot to stop at 21 because your attention did wander. I mean, I do this, so I hope somebody else does this. And again, just start over at 1 when that happens. So the third part of the technique is the most important. And that is when our attention wanders, we notice it, we label the distraction thinking, and we let it go and gently return our attention back to the breath. That gently means without blame, without recrimination, without, oh no, I messed up. And I think that is critical because if you're finding yourself beating yourself up over all those times that you catch your mind wandering, and it means you're missing a real important part of the technique. of understanding what you're doing when you're doing that kind of meditation. And the important thing you're missing is that the returning is the practice. It's not about how well you sit there and how many seconds or minutes you can go without letting your mind get lost. That's a performance, and that's not what we're doing. We're doing practice. And the practice is that every time it does wander, we notice it, we say, I was thinking, and we return. And if you come to your meditation cushion sometimes and you're feeling great, and you sit down and meditate, and things go smoothly, that's all well and good. But there are other times you come and you sit down and your mind is just a mess and it's all over the place. And you might find your mind wandering and returning 50 times. But guess what? That's the heavy lifting. So you did the hard part 50 times. You got a lot of practice in that meditation session because that's what it's about. And if you'll notice then that when we notice that, and when we return, we're creating that gap, right? We're having a part of our brain that steps outside of those thoughts and says, oh, look, I'm thinking. Doesn't happen immediately. You get lost in your thoughts, and then there's that part of your brain that says, whoa, look what I'm doing. And it's strengthening that part of your brain. It's strengthening that mental mechanism, that mindfulness, that will help us then, as we're talking about here with difficult emotions, that will help us notice, whoa, my anger is carrying me away. Whoa, I'm stuck in this worry cycle or this anxiety or whatever it is. And it's that little bit that says, okay, I know what to do here. I can drop that, even if ever so momentarily, I can drop that and keep breathing. So some things we don't do when we meditate, we don't get involved in the content of our thoughts. I mean, we do, but that's something that we're wanting to notice and drop. So if a thought comes up, and then the ideal is that we just label it, yeah, there's a thought, and we let it go. The other thing is we don't try to get rid of thoughts, and this is a surprise to some people. The function of the mind is to produce thoughts. They aren't really the problem. When a thought arises, we simply notice it, let go, and gently return our attention to the breath. The problem with our thoughts is when we don't have control. And when our thoughts take us away, they are slippery little things, and it is extremely easy to get caught up in those thoughts. And we're not trying to create or cling to a particular mental state. We want to remain relaxed and open and free of any agenda. We're not trying to create a feeling of being spiritual. In some ways, we're not sitting down to create a feeling of peace. That's a wonderful byproduct that happens a lot, but it doesn't happen every time. And many times, the times it doesn't happen is when you've brought that really, really difficult mind and you worked really hard and you stand up and you're still struggling with some of that. That doesn't mean it was a bad meditation session. And if you're judging your meditation based on how peaceful you feel at the end of it, then you're looking for more of a performance, and it actually could keep you from your practice in the future because it could become a definite stumbling block where you have an attachment and where you get discouraged if you go a period of time where that's not what you feel. So recognize that it's not a mental state that we're trying to create. It's a practice of letting go. So that's basically how we teach shamatha or shine in this center. And now we're going to see how helpful that mindfulness we create is to this this sequence of methods that Punlop Rinpoche has. So he says the mindful gap, the first step, has three parts in and of itself: feel, hold, and look. And the first one is feel. So what does that mean? It means that first we have something that happens. There's a trigger that triggers an emotional response in us. It might be an email. It might be something someone says. But whatever it is, we find ourselves getting angry or anxious or whatever it is. And he says, the instant you recognize that, you stop everything and just feel it. And I think this is where mindfulness plays a big part. Because if you can stop right when that instant happens, that's only because you have the mindfulness to notice, whoa, I feel this building in me, right? And that comes through practice and meditation. So when you start to feel it, don't block it and don't react to it. So don't try to block that anger. Don't react based on that anger. Just feel it. Use your mindfulness. Use that tiny little gap you've developed with shine to pause and feel that emotion. And when you take that time to feel it, everything kind of slows down. Your attention goes inward, and you can notice that there's still space to breathe, so you aren't so overwhelmed. There can be space between yourself and that anger or that emotion. And that little bit of distance shows you that you are separate from that emotion. You're not just that anger. You're not just that agitation. You are not just that jealousy. You are also the one who is observing it. If you and your anger were exactly the same, you couldn't be watching it from the outside. You couldn't observe it. So Rinpoche says it's like keeping a safe driving distance between you and the car in front of you. As you develop mindfulness, you develop a safe driving distance so that you're basically not crashing every time something unexpected happens. So we don't here want to push away our anger and reject it. We want to stay in touch with the energy. So it's not that we're trying to get it to go away at this step. We just want to feel what that feels like, whether it's a petty annoyance or real fear, loss, grief, or what have you. So Rinpoche wants us to distinguish between the story that we tell ourselves and the actual feeling. So many of us may have heard good ways of expressing what we feel in a relationship. And we may have heard that it's best to say something like, I feel like you're always criticizing me, for example. And that's great in a relationship. But that's not exactly what we're doing here. Because I feel that you're always criticizing me introduces a story around it as well. We want to go more basic than that. We want to just keep it as I feel anger and keep it very, very basic at this point. So we want to label that emotion. And we have to be willing to feel it, even when we want to shut down. It can be our more natural reaction to avoid it. And we all have wonderful ways of distracting ourselves from things like that. We keep them in our pockets, our phones, social media, whatever it is. And we keep that to distract ourselves, to give us it's actually an exercise in a lack of courage to face up to what we're actually seeing. And we all do it. So the next step is to hold. There's a lot more than just feeling the emotion. The next step is to hold in there. So in the hold step, we dig in and we get a good look at what's been bouncing us around. We've already changed some things by slowing down and feeling our anger. And now at hold, we pause. We stay in the present moment. We continue to feel the energy of that anger or that emotion. We stay with our experience. We watch it mindfully, but we don't react to it. We don't go into the past and rewind and replay what just made us angry, or go into the future and start planning our wonderful comeback that we're going to have to that person who just said something. We want to really stay present only in that moment. Hold still, Rinpoche says, in the living, breathing present. He says you might need to find a place to be alone to practice this, especially at first. But this is where you do nothing but just pay attention. And if you're doing something, you're probably not holding still. He says, what are your choices? You're having all of this emotional upheaval, and really, you can either struggle and make yourself miserable, or you can relax. And this is that step where you're teaching yourself to relax. So that first step says, oh, I'm feeling this. I'm going to just feel it. And the second step says, I'm going to hold in the present moment now. And he says that if you can stick with the intensity of an emotion for a little while, it's a very powerful and eye-opening experience. If you can observe your anger without getting lost in irate thoughts that just create a more elaborate storyline, you'll see how your thoughts begin to change and evolve naturally without any input from you. And if you can stick with it, you'll see this happen. You'll see the energy shift and change. You'll see it growing stronger and weaker. And what that tells us is that emotion is just as much a part of the ever-changing world that we're in as everything else. It's not there to stay. It's not something that, oh, there's this big monolithic anger that I have right now. No, it's got its own ebbs and flows. So in the same way that feeling takes courage, holding takes patience. It takes patience to stay with whatever you're feeling and without reacting to it over and over. And the third part of this first step, the third part of Mindful Gap, is to look. We've learned a lot from feeling and holding. We have a deeper understanding and clearer view of our emotions. We're almost an expert at dealing with them compared to when we started to feel. But now as we look face to face at whatever intensity is knocking at our minds. We look at the anger or the grief or the passion or the greed without any filters, no special effects, no trying to make it better than it is. You're not trying to make it look nicer or more terrifying. You're tired of your old patterns and your old habits, and you're willing to look nakedly at your emotion and see it without any conceptual or philosophical thinking attached to it. And Rinpoche says, how is this any different than what you've been doing all along? You've already felt it. You've held through it. But now, as you start to look, you see how your emotions can be more fluid than you thought. You begin to see that your emotions are actually very momentary, and that there is space around them. There is a spark of anger, and then another spark, and another spark. And you can see them rise and subside. You start to be able to see that there is space in between those sparks. And each of those sparks is only alive in the present moment, in the space of nowness. Which means there is no inevitability regarding what is going to happen in the next moment with that emotion. And that lack of inevitability means that there's a whole lot more power in your own mind than what you're giving yourself credit for. Because you're treating that emotion as so powerful and inevitable that you get overwhelmed. And that's not necessarily the case. So if the anger sparks and sparks and sparks again, it's not necessarily the same. It's not the same anger in every moment. It's new every moment. And when you start to look, you realize that it is the very nature of emotions to be constantly morphing and changing. It's how emotions are. It's what they do. It is a profound insight, and it changes your relationship to emotions forever. When you're able to see the momentary nature of your feelings, all your efforts and building mindfulness are starting to pay off. This is real work. This is really taming your mind and will allow you to practice what is helpful. It does require that you, because it's not a continuous thing, because emotions come up over and over in the present moment, you have to keep it alive. If you're not keeping that emotion alive, it really will just fade away, because it has to be renewed in every moment, over and over. So looking shows you the way forward in your emotions and transforms your perception in a fundamental way. You stop seeing emotions as things that are unchanging and continuous and see how flexible they actually are. You can start to relate to your emotions as supple, mobile energy instead of something tough and solid. And the more you practice feeling, holding, and looking, the more skilled you become at observing and transforming your emotional states by giving yourself that space from them. So he says, when your emotion comes up, pick your favorite emotion to work on this week. And when it comes up, feel it, hold still without reacting, and then look into that gap and look at what that looks like. Now, we come to step two of his emotional rescue plan. And he calls this clear seeing. And we go a little deeper with this one. He says, basically the idea is to take the mindfulness that you've gained in the first step, use that space you now have to do some deep and hard analysis of your own emotional landscape. So too often we're too close to our emotions to really get a good picture of them. We miss that big picture because we're so close. We can't take that step back. But now we've created a gap, and now we're going to analyze our emotions in a very personal way. This is about you. This is not theoretical, philosophical analyzing emotions with a capital E. This is looking at your own mind. And if we're too close to our emotions, we're going to miss critical information. He says it's like heading toward an important crossroads or a critical moment in a relationship. If you're not paying attention, some really bad things can happen. So if you're just interpreting your events at face value and not looking under the surface, then you're going to miss the broader context and be unaware when you are in a critical moment. He says that this is where a lot that you've learned in your Dharma practice, in your Dharma study, comes into play. This is where we take the teachings of the Four Noble Truths that explain to us that the reason we're miserable is that we are grasping after things. We're grasping after things because we don't want them to change. Or we're grasping after them because we don't have them and we want them. Or the flip side of that, we're grasping after the absence of something, meaning we're averse. We're pushing something away. We want things to be other than they are. And that, the Four Noble Truths tell us, is the cause of suffering. It's the cause of our misery. So we take that intelligence that we learn here on a weekly basis, and we use that to analyze our emotional responses. We apply that wisdom to our own situation, and we ask ourselves, what's the big picture here? Am I feeling insecure? What's the root of my insecurity? What are my patterns in relationships? What are my habits? What do I fall back on? What triggers my fear? What triggers my anger? And he says, you may think you know your emotions well, but when you step back, sometimes these feelings can look very different if we have a lot of space around them. Some people choose to involve a second person, somebody outside of themselves to help them get that space. And Punlop Rinpoche says therapy can be a very important way to help do this analysis. If we don't have enough of a step back, then we often lack a reference point, and we have trouble getting a grasp on why we are reacting the way we are. He says, once we really analyze a situation and understand our response, we can often look back at other events in our past and see the same response, see that pattern, because that's what we're doing. We have a habit that's very ingrained, and we have times over and over throughout our lives when that same thing has come up. I doubt this is a big surprise to a lot of you, right? The fact that you're sitting here today tells me that you're someone who looks inward. And as someone who looks inward, you recognize a lot of what we're saying here. And you've probably done a lot of work on analyzing your emotional response already. Rinpoche says that we start to develop who we are emotionally, what our emotional patterns are, which emotions keep coming around and bothering us day after day, which ones are strongest and most difficult to work with, and which ones are a challenge for us. We have to take time for this personal reflection, and we have to do it with bravery. We have to learn to relate to our emotions personally. We are basically building a relationship with our emotions. And Rinpoche says, just like any other relationship that you're building, it requires a high degree of honesty and vulnerability. But as you do this, over the long term, as you get to know your emotions well, you begin to see what emotion is like for you, what each emotion is like for you personally, how it comes up, where you feel it in your body, where it goes after you chase it with your thoughts, and so on. What your stories are that you add to it, what concepts and philosophies you layer on top of it, what emotions you pile on other emotions. How many people feel guilt that is the secondary emotion after the first emotion, or shame, or blame, or what have you? So, clear seeing means observing the situation and trying to see as many factors as you can that went into creating it. It doesn't mean asking why and then creating a story. Why am I angry this time? And then you start getting involved in the story that you build around it. It means really going deeper and saying, why do I get angry? Why is this my reaction? And he says, it's not about coming up with justifications. It's about approaching it with curiosity and doing a fact check on your emotion. He says, there's no need to rush to any conclusion. Give yourself time to settle down and see the bigger picture. Some emotions aren't constant. Some of our emotional responses we have when we're sitting in a room like this and listening, it's the furthest thing from our minds, and it's just not something that comes up except in the presence of a very specific trigger. And so it's kind of hidden. It seems like not something we would do. But we all have those hidden emotions, those triggers, and those patterns. And so it's good to remember those and recognize those and really dissect those as well. And again, he mentions getting help from a therapist or a trusted friend from that may be part of it as well. So he says, when you don't get this big picture of your emotions and your view's too narrow, then you fall into the trap of blame. And he says, blame never results in good judgment, happiness, or wisdom. It only brings confusion, more pain, and more ways of tying yourself into knots. You just get stuck and further from freedom. Now, the final step, and I'm running a little short on time, so I'll try to go quickly. The final step is that once we've done this hard work of getting to know our painful emotions, face them as they are, recognize them, create a relationship with them, it's then that you'll be able to let them go. You've accomplished a lot already, and you've recognized that your emotions are not bad and through. They're useful to you. They're full of potential. There's a wisdom in them, a way of learning about yourself and how your mind works. Now you can work directly with that energy and let it all go. He says that in order to truly let it go, we have to let it come. And the first two steps are all about letting it come and then looking at it and analyzing it. If we try to just let it go as step one, we might be deluding ourselves. We might be just practicing avoidance and rejection of that emotion. And that's not going to be a way that really releases the potential, the energy, and the wisdom that is in that emotion, what it's telling us about our minds. But if we do that hard work at the beginning, then we're not hiding when we try to let that go. We've already been willing to recognize our emotions as creative energy. Like with anger, for example, we kind of have a choice. We can try to control it, or we can let it come in, we can experience it, and then we can let it go. And he says, the tighter you hold on to that energy that would otherwise move freely, The more you twist it this way or that, the tighter the knots, anxiety, or stress that invades your body and mind. So letting go turns out to be the opposite of rejecting your emotions. It is actually the beginning of letting them into your life just as they are, and then taking the next breath. So this sounds a whole lot like what we do with our thoughts when we meditate. When our thoughts arise, we don't reject them. We don't control them. We don't follow them. We just recognize those thoughts and we let them go. He says this takes a lot of determination. It's hard to do. So it really helps to remind ourselves of how destructive your current way of relating to your emotions has been, how negatively it has impacted your life. And he says, especially with anger, and that's why he uses this example, especially with anger, it has been, for many of us, so destructive throughout our lives that it's important to use that knowledge to build the determination to do the hard work from here on out. And he says, it's not going to be possible to release 100% of your emotions right away. And you're going to be disappointed if that's what you are expecting. But you can get there if you practice. Every time you have the chance to release something like this, and every time you actually have the mindfulness to follow through on this process, you're building a new habit. He says, letting go takes place on two levels. First, you gradually release the most apparent energy of each emotion. And once you're skilled at that, you can work on letting go on a more subtle level so that even the scent of that emotion fades away. But it takes a lot of time and effort. And it requires mindfulness, being in the present, and the willingness to observe what's going on. He mentions that as we let go, we might have earlier noticed where in our bodies these emotions are happening. And therefore, letting go can involve a relaxation of your body, a loosening in the area that you recognize as tight that is holding on to that emotion. And he says many times we struggle with being present in our bodies. But when we learn to drop all our labels about our bodies and simply to look at our bodies without judgment, we can have a completely different experience of it. So once we've relaxed that emotion and let go of it and we feel that relaxation in our body, we can also feel that relaxation in our minds. You can name the emotion, give it a bit of distance. Right now I'm angry or sad or worrying. Then don't hold on to it anymore with your thoughts. Don't build the story around it. Let it happen, let it change, and let it subside. I'm reminded of a metaphor that is used a lot in our tradition, of the fact that thoughts in our minds, and for the purpose of what we're talking about today, our difficult emotions are like waves in the ocean. They rise up, they go back in. They rise and fall. And they're of the same substance as the ocean being our minds. We're not ever going to get rid of any of that rising and falling because that is what our minds are. But we have choices in how we relate to that. Think of your last trip to the beach. You can look at the waves, I suppose, and say they shouldn't be that way. We've got to settle this down. You've got to try to reject those waves and not let that happen. And you're never going to get anywhere with that. Similarly, you can get too caught up in every wave and let every wave toss you around and toss you about. And Bokar Rinpoche had a great way of saying it in one of our book studies that we did sometime last year. He said, just sit on the beach and relax. just watch those waves go up and down. And it's not easy. It requires distance. It requires mindfulness. It requires practice. And it requires letting those emotions come, looking at them, and then letting them go. It's a new way of relating to them with a naturalness. So I hope this has been helpful. We do have a few minutes for a couple questions from the microphone if anyone would like to ask any questions. Yes, Jim.
Hi, Marcus. Thank you. I found that very, very engaging. Part of what came to my mind was, I should back up a little bit. My family, and eventually made a lot of different psychologists, psychiatrists wealthy by having me have a real young relationship to our family. And the number one question over and over again was pour out these stories, but they just simply go, and how did that make you feel?
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I do mm-hmm. a lot of other kind of recovery programs, and it's always kind of boils down to, and how did that make you feel? and it is the primary place to start for mm-hmm. me. At first, I got real resentful of it for a while. I thought, like, my God, you know, mm-hmm. well, how would you feel? Or but what it was is I had already learned to cut off the majority of the feelings, not even recognizing that go right to the story that mm-hmm. I build around
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And that carried resentment and on and on. Mm-hmm. But so I say that to say I know how much my life tremendously benefited, and I grow great gratitude to all mm-hmm. the psychologists, psychiatrists, mm-hmm. et cetera, to working through its major issues. So when this came up and you started to like, we're doing it on the pillow, which I love and I do, mm-hmm. but I kept thinking, what if you need that other little piece, mm-hmm. the person mm-hmm. or whatever? And if I were to call Lama Kathy every time someone came, well, she'd have to have a you know, a hotline on her hip. So, you know, I don't do that. But then all of a sudden, again, whereas what I do, and I really appreciate it because I sometimes used to feel guilty about it, I'm a tremendous reader of mm. all the books mm-hmm. and the literature and material related to our tradition and all that. And I go out to the tea house. Yes, I always meditate, mm-hmm. and I enjoy that. Or, you know, some days I enjoy and some other days I have to force through, but I know that's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I would kind of feel very like, I wonder if everybody else spends so much time reading mm. all this stuff. But I just gave myself permission. I mean, it's how mm-hmm. I end every day. It's mm. part of my middle of the day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a way for me to let someone else, hopefully with more wisdom than I've got with these two brain cells, mm-hmm. inform mm-hmm. and guide me mm-hmm. as I slowly and gently move myself through this journey.
Right.
And I hadn't heard other things with so much reference, or a couple times a reference of the value of opening a book to look at the people mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. have more time and miles on their odometer in this program than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me it was really helpful. So thank you for.
Yeah, great. Thank you for your comments. And yes, your Dharma study can definitely help with a lot of that analysis. And I do think it's great. Lama Kathy is a big proponent of the value of therapy. And Punlop Rinpoche is a proponent of the value of therapy when it's needed. I think there is a danger in trying to substitute our spiritual practice for therapy, or thinking that because we are meditators and because we have these high ideals that we wouldn't need it. We just need to meditate more or something like that. And I think that's just turning our backs on a skillful way that we can deal with things like that. So whether that skillful way of dealing with it is through teachings and books, or through a therapist, or through a good friend, you know, we take refuge in the Sangha. That's part of what we take refuge in. And there's a lot of way of understanding that. But any of our companions that help us with our practice, whether they are Buddhist or not, can be part of the Sangha for us. They can be part of our companion, one of our companions on the path. So, yes, Tim.
The emotion that I chose was lack of generosity.
Mm.
And my technique in the past is when I'm generous, I write the check.
Mm.
And when I'm not generous, I withhold writing the check.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when I write the check, then I ultimately never really miss the money.
Mm.
And when I don't write the check, I feel bad for not being supportive of whatever mm-hmm. that person or organization that I chose to withhold the check from.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a physical thing that I do to be generous.
Mm-hmm.
But this talk was about the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out what the emotion is that I should be dealing with that's underlying writing or not writing the check.
Do you notice a feeling when you have an aversion to writing that check? Is there a feeling that you notice when you draw back and when you, you know, is there any kind of feeling that you notice?
Well,
there?
There's, you know, it's a scarcity thing, a lack of,
right.
you know, like, you know, oh, I'm nervous about, you know, running out of money or something,
right.
you know,
right.
not making it to the next payday.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Right. So there's a fear there. There's a,
yeah.
there's a, you're working then from a lack.
Right.
The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva has a line in there, and I don't have it memorized. I don't remember it offhand, but he basically talks about how when you act with generosity, instead of thinking in terms of how much can I afford to give, you think more in terms of how much is left for me to give. It's not how much is left for me after I give. It's more how much can I give. And there's a real, I think there's a very, if you sit with that a while, I think you'll find that there is an emotion in there. I don't know for you what the trigger is for that emotion, but I think you'll find there probably is an emotion behind when you feel that generosity and when you don't feel that generosity. You may feel it in your body, but it sounds like it's fairly subtle. It sounds like it's not so in your face as some of the more fiery emotions may be. But I think it's there. I think there's an emotion there. And like you said, that emotion of the fear of scarcity, if you can work with that, if you can analyze that, if you can look at patterns of when you feel that fear of scarcity and when you don't, I think there's probably a lot of wisdom you can pull from that too.
Thanks.
So thanks for bringing that up, because that's a fantastic one to analyze, because it's not so easy and so cut and dried as, well, my partner says this and I hit the ceiling. You know, that's so in our face, right? But this one's a lot more subtle that you bring up. So thank you. Yes, and this will have to be the last question.
I was going to ask, are you going to donate blood upstairs afterwards?
Oh, I did not know anything about it. So if you want to let us all know about it, I didn't know about it.
Blood drive up there. And
blood drive today?
I'm not sure if it's going all day or not.
Okay.
But if anyone wants to, it's up in the...
Excellent. Well, thank you for letting us know. There's a blood drive upstairs. Anyone who wants to donate, wonderful thing to do. Oh, that it ends at 1 or 1:30, so we'd need to get in there right away? Okay. Sounds great. All right. Well, thank you very much. There is great virtue in learning to tame our minds, in learning about how to tame our minds, and showing up here to over and over, week after week, to enrich our practice. And especially when we do those things for the benefit of all beings. So let's not hold this virtue to ourselves. May the virtue we have generated today enrich all beings that they come to happiness and freedom from suffering. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.